from Hospice UK and Dying Matters, this is the Dying Matters podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor McConnell. It's estimated that around 500,000 people die in England each year. A quarter of those people will die of cancer. Heart disease has long been hailed as the UK's biggest killer, although research from last year showed that dementia has taken the top spot. It seems that as our life expectancy increases, we have to prepare for death and loss in new ways, whether it's through the infamous long goodbye of Alzheimer's disease or the swift progression of an aggressive form of cancer. Dealing with the loss of loved ones definitely isn't getting any easier. But it does happen to all of us. You would think that given that this is such a universal experience, we'd be more open and receptive to talking about what it's like to be bereaved. But time and time again, we hear that people who are bereaved feel incredibly isolated, unable to talk about what's weighing them down. I think it's probably because we're scared of what it does to us. The worst phone call I've ever had was from my brother, telling me that our mum's cousin Kate, to whom we were all very close, had had a double brain aneurysm, was in a coma, and was very unlikely to recover, and that there was something wrong with our mum. After she heard the news, Mum went into shock and, for a while, completely lost her short-term memory. We later found out this was called transient global amnesia. She forgot the news itself and what she was doing, even having no idea where all the vegetables she'd been prepping for dinner had come from. For the next few hours, Dad had to explain and re-explain what had happened, only for Mum to forget again a few moments later. She still has no memory of those hours. Meanwhile, in the time between Kate going into the coma and her death, I had my first and only panic attack, too paralysed to go into work by the conviction that any day now I was going to get a call telling me that she'd died. And when I did get that call, the sense of relief was overwhelming, which of course brought about its own cocktail of shame and guilt. I tell this story to show not only how brutal grief and bereavement can be, but how little we understand about how it affects us, and why it affects us so differently, sometimes traumatically. My guest this week knows all about traumatic grief. In this episode, I talked to Linda Magistris about her experience of bereavement, and what it was about that experience that inspired her to set up a charity called the Good Grief Trust.
So yes, I started the Good Grief Trust 18 months ago now. And I launched because of my experience of my own grief after losing my partner, Graham. So we were together for 8 years, and he died in September 2014 of a rare cancer, soft tissue sarcoma. He only had it for 5.5 months, so it was a bit of a shock when he finally died. And obviously a very difficult process leading up to it. And I'd lost my dad 17 years ago, which obviously was just absolutely awful. But I think we're sort of wired, or at least I feel personally, as though I was sort of expecting it at some point for your parent to die. So as much as it was absolutely horrible and really, really shattered sort of me at the time, I seemed to sort of get over it a lot easier, certainly, than Graham. So when he died, I needed help because I literally thought I was going completely crazy. Yeah, I used to sort of stride across Wimbledon Common, where we spent a lot of time, and I'd shout to the sky, you know, "Where are you?" Because I literally couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why he just wasn't there anymore. It was just crazy. I sort of understood with my dad, he'd gone and we buried him, and it was sort of a process that I got through. But with Graham, it was just so alien. Didn't understand. I literally was struggling so badly. I couldn't get off the sofa. I'd sort of sit there and stare at the wall and just had this massive weight. I couldn't shift it. And then I felt like I was sort of walking through treacle and I couldn't get anything done. And anyway, so I went to the GP and I just said, "I really need some help." So he signposted me to Crewes, and I couldn't access it, sadly, in the borough that I lived in. So I tried all over the place, and they did have some counselling sessions, and I thought, right, okay, I don't know what I want, but I needed to speak to someone. So I had 4 counselling sessions with a really lovely lady, and I just cried through the whole thing. And then I sort of thought, well, what else can I do? You know, what else can I do that's really going to help me? So I went back to my GP, And he sort of couldn't really help me with anything else. He said, well, would you like some pills, antidepressants? And I, you know, to go to sleep. And I thought, well, I don't want to sleep. I just didn't know what else I needed. But I just, I thought there must be something else out there. And I went back and saw a third GP, and there was nothing else on offer. So I went back to the hospitals where he was treated. And again, I just couldn't understand why there wasn't any actual bereavement support groups. Because I think instinctively, I felt as though I needed a group because I'm quite sort of chatty. And I, as a person, I think I just felt as though I needed to speak to other people who'd been through it. And there didn't seem to be anything on offer at all, which I was completely dumbfounded about. I just thought, this is mad. Because the Macmillan office that I went to in one of the hospitals where he was treated had every single leaflet everywhere that had every cancer. But nothing for bereavement support. And they actually said to me, if you'd like to start a bereavement support group, that would be amazing. I thought, you are, what? I was completely baffled. What do you mean? I thought, well, there must be something. Anyway, so of course I Googled. I thought, well, I'll just go online and Googled. And I accidentally found Widowed and Young, which was a charity that I saw and looked like it was amazing because it helped people under 50 who'd lost someone. I thought, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I want. Joined, met other people who'd been through a bereavement. And that was it. I thought, wow, this is it. This is what I really needed. Why was this not available? I went to meet my GP and I said, well, did you not know about this charity? And he'd never heard of it. And I just thought, what a shame. You know, this is crazy. Other people need, obviously, the same sort of thing with me if they'd lost a partner. That might help them. Who knows what helps anybody because we're all completely individual. But I just knew that it needed to be brought together and quickly because I needed help quickly. Anyway, so that was basically what I did. I did then spent a couple of years researching the Good Grief Trust and what we were going to offer, and found that actually speaking to lots of key bereavement charities, everyone was doing incredible work. And I thought, right, well, it seemed to be the only thing to do is bring it all together under a website, because currently I realised, yes, we all have bereavement packs. Most hospitals, hospices would have a bereavement pack. And then I spoke to the police and they would have sort of the odd leaflet that wasn't particularly sort of joined together. There might be lots of charities that were left off of those pieces of information that obviously couldn't be kept updated very frequently because they're pieces of paper. So I thought, right, okay, it has to be online, that you can constantly update very quickly. It will be a national online resource, a central database that we can all access, not only people like me who have lost a partner, parent, sibling, friend, cousin, colleague, whoever it is that's really key to you that you've lost and you need support, whether that's on day one, 6 months down the line, 20 years down the line, it didn't really matter. But what I did realise is that we all need to be able to know that actually there is support out there if you wanted it, when you want it. So I thought, right, okay, bring it all together under the one umbrella. And that's our branding as well, is the umbrella, because I think it's really important for people who are bereaved to know that we're all in the same boat together. And no matter who you've lost and what you need, I felt... and having done a lot of research with hundreds of people who are bereaved, it seemed the key point was that we all needed to have our grief acknowledged, and the support and that sort of caring hand being reached out. That's why I sort of call it the sort of virtual hand of friendship, because I feel like we're reaching out into the communities, finding those people who perhaps are lost. You know, it's great for those people who have been found and they're offered support. But what about all those people who, you know, maybe there's a sudden death and maybe they're not under the care of a hospice or a hospital? So in when? Last November, not very long ago. 2017, we launched the website and we've brought 530 organisations, more actually now every day. We get people saying, can we please, you know, go on your database? So whether that's the local coffee shop that offers a bit of a bereavement, you know, group, or whether that's an individual, or whether it's a big national charity organisation like Hospice UK or Child Bereavement UK or Cruise, they're all on there. So now there's a map and you can literally put in your postcode and there it is. It all pops up.
And you find what's in your area.
You find out what's in your area, and you also find out from other people, because there's a lot of video footage. So there'll be interviews with people like me who have lost a partner at different stages as well. So we've got people who on day one have done an interview, you know, very early on, very early stages of grief. obviously not day one, but, you know, that sort of raw feeling that you still got. And we've got people who have lost someone 10 years down the line and further. And that has sort of the impact with someone who's lost a child, you know, sibling, friend, all the way along. But what is key as well is that we've got interviews from health professionals. We've got interviews from people like Tracy Bleakley, CEO of, you know, Hospice UK. We've got interviews from one of our patrons, who's Fiona Murphy, who is an incredible woman who has sort of brought bereavement out into the open, I think, across all of her hospitals in Manchester, and she's doing incredible work. And she's given advice to not only people who are bereaved, but to health professionals, to the nurses, to the doctors, to the health carers, really. Anyone who's dealing with anyone who's lost anyone. We've got pre-bereavement advice, so people like Find Me Help and Dying Matters sites come up very quickly. So for those who are just sort of looking through and thinking either they're a carer or perhaps they're terminally ill, you know, and at end of life themselves, and are just sort of looking around thinking, you know, I need help, maybe, you know, what can I sort of be doing to help my relatives deal with it when I go? Or the carers thinking, what is it I can do to really support my relative? So there's lots of interviews with people who are terminally ill themselves, or they've just lost someone, and they know that talking about it, you know, talking about your wills, talking about how you sort of deal with those really difficult conversations. So there are things like that on there. So it's a whole wealth, we hope, and a sort of a hub of sort of support that we hope will be developed ongoing down the line.
Yeah. And it's important, isn't it, for stuff like that to be easily accessible and easy to find. Because, yeah. I mean, it's a massive, onerous thing to put on someone who's just been through bereavement to expect them to find, you know, their own way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, often you'll hear people, you know, you can't even make a cup of tea. You can't even get yourself showered, you know, yeah. Let alone think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, you know, where can I find the support? You know, whether that's really targeted and specific or just general, really. And you are lucky if you've got a great GP. You know, there are many brilliant, obviously, GPs and hospitals and hospices who will give you fantastic advice and information. But we do have holes across the country, and we need to obviously improve our bereavement support. And if you are unlucky and perhaps you're not signposted to what you want quickly enough, there can be massive implications, you know, ongoing with your life. I mean, the statistics that we know with young people is really, really worrying. You know, there was a study at Manchester University last year that showed that 28% of 20 to 24 year olds who commit suicide have had a bereavement. And that is shocking. Really, that's nearly 30% of young people, you know, feel that they're not supported, perhaps. And we don't know, you know, that the sort of real implications of that. But if perhaps we can let them know that actually there is help out there. And we know homelessness, a lot of homelessness, you know, is down to people who have had a bereavement, and they're grieving and they can't, you know, cope with it for whatever reason. So yeah, there are, you know, potential health, mental health implications if you're not supported. And what we say is that, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on people who have had a baby. You know, you get a pamper pack and you get a district nurse turns up at your door and your GP checks on you and yeah. Everybody's weighing your baby and it's all, you know, but at the end of life, there needs to be just as much emphasis. There needs to be just as much care. It's a very precious time of life. And as we know, the hospices do an amazing job of caring for that person and caring for the people who are left behind. But, you know, there are a lot of holes in that. And we need to plug those holes across the country and let people know that it is, you know, really, really an important time of life. Because you need to live your life. Those people who are left behind need to then go forward knowing they can actually find support. They can find hope. They can move forward. You know, it's the most devastating time in your life. And you think, well, it's over. It's finished. You know, if you've lost your partner and you have two young children or however it is, you know, to bring up, or, you know, perhaps you've had an amazing marriage for 70 years or, you know, and suddenly that your life partner is gone, you know, or anyone, your best friend. And your best friend is that person you always turn to on a daily basis. And they're just not there anymore. People, how can you carry on with your life in a really productive way? The way you do it is to know that actually there are other people in the same boat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really key. I mean, that's why we've got the website. And now we've got our Good Grief card. So what we've done, we've launched this new national initiative. It's a condolence card, but inside it, you've got a little plastic card called the Good Grief card. And that's going to be mandatory across the country. We hope every single frontline organisation will have that card. They will have the availability of that to then instantly give it to anybody who needs support right at the time of death. So it will be with death certificate. They can then access the website and they will know that even if they are given a really lovely pack from that particular organisation and it's got local information about it, it's got something about the hospital or the hospice or the process of a coroner or the inquest, you can also access national support and you will know that other people have been through it as well. And you can watch those videos and read those articles. And that's extra support. That's the sort of enhancing their support. So that is hopefully something that will be going out across the country everywhere this year. And then the next thing we're doing, which we're really, really excited about, is our Good Grief pop-up cafes. So what we've got an umbrella, a parasol, again, with our umbrella branding that we hope, because we've got all these other organisations under our umbrella and we're trying to promote everything that they're doing. So we've said, look, you know, if you're doing an event, come to us and we'll let everyone know about it. Or if you've got incredible bereavement support that you're actually sort of developing within your own hospital or hospice, and maybe you've got a bereavement suite that you've just, you know, renovated and you've got incredible new things that you've got going. And, you know, we've spoken to A&E departments who are trying to develop little bags so that if anyone does die in A&E, they can give that relative a little bag and it's got a candle in it and maybe a condolence card. It's got a little personal, you know, packet of tissues, whatever it is. The Good Grief card will go in that. But what we're hoping now is to promote every single organisation across the country. And they can pop up these umbrellas anywhere they want, hopefully during Dying Matters Week. Mm-hmm. Hopefully then onwards into the summer, they can pop them up in their car parks, in their gardens. It can be used for domestic use as well. So a bit like Macmillan Coffee Morning. Everyone can just pop it up and literally and figuratively get under that umbrella and just, you know, put the kettle on, open a glass of wine or, you know, a bottle of wine or something and sit there and share your stories with other people who've been through it. And it is amazing because we know that, you know, food and drink is an incredible sort of icebreaker.
Yeah.
Bring people together, get people relaxing and just sharing those stories. And then hopefully within the community, because I know that's a big focus with Hospice UK as well, is that we go out into the community and we sit and we find people who, you know, maybe feel isolated and lost and bring them together. And then hopefully what they'll do is that they will build a network of support with other people who've been through the same thing locally. So that then they go, oh, okay, well, let's just share our numbers here. You know, maybe you've lost a child or you've lost your best friend. And we'll go out and we'll have coffee, you know, and then you'll build up those networks by themselves. And it will naturally just happen. It would be that sort of ripple effect. We've done it a couple locally so far, and we've done it in theatres, and it's just amazing. You know, you put a table and chair there and you put an umbrella up and people sit under it. And whether that's to talk about, you know, the show they've just seen or maybe what they're doing next week, or whether it is like we had, you know, we put it up in a theatre recently and we did a show, and somebody came up to us and she'd lost her mum. And she said, sort of hovered on the corner, and she said, is it too late? Do you think it's 3 years down the line for me to access support? And we said, of course not, absolutely not. Sit down. You know, we've got a cup of coffee for her. And she sat, and it's the first time she's spoken about her mum. But it was just a sort of a visual, sort of really strong place for them just to go, do you know what? You are supported, and we're all in the same boat. Let's just sit down and just relax and have that sort of access to know that actually you can just open it up and you know, in a really sort of informal way, really.
Yeah, and that this is a space where it's okay to do that. I feel like we worry a lot about how it might not be okay for other people to bring up loss and how we're feeling.
That's a real biggie. I mean, one of our biggest quotes on our Facebook page, which has reached something like 625,000 people and shared 6,000 times. Whenever we put it out there, you know, it's always shared. And it's all about, you know, remembering the person that's died. Don't be worried about mentioning their name. You know, we haven't forgotten they've died. You're not going to hurt us anymore. Just say their name, you know, and have that sort of freedom for friends and family and anyone who's connected with the person who's bereaved, just to be open and honest about their feelings. And if you don't know what to say, just say, do you know what? Don't know what to say, but I'm here, you know, and I'm here sitting here having a cup of coffee and you know, and whenever you need me, I'm here, you know. Don't cross the road. Don't sort of, you know, don't pick up the phone because you think, I just don't know what to say, I'm going to say the wrong thing. You can't really, you know, if you're kind and you're, you know, you're caring, which obviously most people are, and they just want to help, but they're just scared and don't know what to say because they think if they bring that person's name up, it's going to shatter you again. But it won't, you know what? It won't, generally, because you want to talk about that person. They're part of your life. They're still part of your life. They're always going to be. Their photo's going to be around. And that you'll always want to talk about them because they were so key and they've gone. And to, for them not to be around and not to be spoken about is painful. And it's actually the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, speak about them. It's fine. You know, just do that. So again, that's another, you know, it brings people together and they go, oh, thank goodness. And it's this big weight off of their minds, friends and family, because they don't really know what to do. And if you've never been through a bereavement yourself, why would you? You know, why would you know how to act? But that's another carpet that's pulled from under you. Your network, your support network, if they're not there for you, for whatever reason, it's another loss.
Yeah.
We can't keep having that loss, because actually it's really, really shattering and exhausting. You know, you're physically utterly exhausted, and that's another thing that you don't know about until someone tells you about that. I wish people had told me, you know, you will be exhausted, you might have aches and pains, you know, you might have something that actually you think, oh my goodness, you know, this is really serious, I've got to go and see someone about, but and go and see someone, you know, but generally it's incredible. You know, there are physical symptoms of grief, you know, and we do obviously check them out first, but it's natural, it's normal. And I think that's, again, what we're trying to get out is the message, actually, do you know what? It's all normal. You know, you are going to feel this, and you might feel worse later on. A lot of people say, oh, you know, once the first year's over, you know, hope, what, you're not moving on, why you're not doing, you know, you think, actually, do you know what? We've just posted something on our Facebook about the second year. It's often worse than the first, because the second year is sometimes more painful because they're further away from you, and then people stop talking about them even more, you know. And that's really difficult, yeah. Really difficult.
It's like, oh, this is my life now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you're sort of left alone even more. And so that's the time, actually, you do need more support. You do need more people talking about that person and maybe celebrating their life and, you know, having parties and events and you know, time to talk about them. Maybe get the photo albums out and, you know, sort of, get the memory boxes out and see, maybe especially for children as well, that ongoing discussion is really, really important.
Yeah. And did you ever notice people, I mean, because, like, I think of all the people who have been bereaved, you probably went all the way leaning into that in a way that a lot of people are really afraid to do.
Yeah.
Did people kind of, how do people react to that and the fact that you've been so public about everything?
I mean, some people have said, you know, does it keep bringing it up, you know, does it keep bringing it up about Graham, and, you know, and does it make you sad? And yet sometimes I've got choked up when I've stood up in public and talked about him, about, you know, because he was my best friend, he was, you know, so important in my life. But I feel now this is something that I'm just sort of meant to do, really. It's, you know, I feel like this is the path that I've been given, and I'm really, really passionate, because every single day, as we know, you know, every 22 minutes a parent dies. You know, it's just ongoing. 525,000 people die a year, you know. And so every minute of every day, someone is walking out of a hospital in a hospice, or having the police knock on their door, or, you know, in a road traffic accident, whatever it is, someone is going through the pain, and it's so traumatic in their life, that they need that help and that support. And I feel driven now to do this. And I find that, you know, every day on our Facebook page, every day we get people saying, oh my goodness, you know, thank you for showing me that I'm not alone. And that's massively powerful. And now we know it's completely necessary and it will be ongoing. So yeah, I mean, it does, it drives me on. And it's a real energy that we get, and I get personally, by talking about my story. And you'll find, I mean, most people, they will want to talk about this. Well, they probably won't want to do it publicly, like I've been doing. but, you know, they do want to talk about it with friends and family and colleagues. And so we do need to get those conversations out there, you know, about death and dying and grief and bereavement, because it's a big, big issue. And I think we've seen that with, you know, with people like Rio Ferdinand talking about it and Mary Berry and, you know, all the big campaigns that have gone out. People want to talk about this because it really is key. And Prince Harry and Prince William have said, you know, 20 years down the line, they wish they'd spoken about their mom so much sooner. Maybe they wouldn't have had the angst and the sort of anxieties and those, the stress in their life. Maybe, you know, we do need to just get out and go, do you know what? It's fine. It's fine. It's part of life and it's part of death. You know, it's not morbid talking about death and bereavement and grief and everything else. It's just part of life. And the sooner we get to grips with that, the better. Because, you know, then we all start talking about it. We all start preparing for it. And we all start saying, well, do you know what? It's fine. Let's just think about it. And what are we going to do? How are we going to prepare our children? I mean, we did an event at the Royal Hospice, Royal Trinity Hospice recently. And there was a lady there who was a patient dying of lung cancer. And she was so vocal. She was amazing. And she said, I'm preparing my children, my adult daughters, you know, I'm going out and how can I do that? But she was doing very well on her own. She didn't need any advice at all. But she was passionate about trying to prepare her children. And that's something we really need to do, because otherwise we leave them with the guilt, the burden. Did we do the right thing? You know, did they want us to be cremated? Did they want us to have a burial? Did they want us, you know, let's all just...
The instinct is to... protect them, isn't it?
It is. And actually, you're doing the reverse. you're doing the reverse, because if you give them, if you can, think about it now, and obviously not when you get really ill and you're facing that sort of diagnosis. If you can do it while you're having a cup of tea around the coffee table or, you know, during lunch or when you're sitting in the garden in the summer, have a chat about it, you know, and everyone's up for it. And, you know, most children... especially sort of teenagers, you know, they're sort of quite up for chatting about it because they think it's quite an interesting thing. They go, oh, hang on a minute, you know, what is it you want? And, you know, and it's all just, that generation is the ones that we need to sort of focus on. And if they've got a part of it, they feel part of it as well. And any stage of life, I think we just need to talk about it and try and prepare for it and just let our relatives know how we feel, because they can be left with that. You know, what did you want? You know, I've visited a crematorium recently. And again, that's another thing we need to do, is sort of open up doors to the things that are taboo. You know, crematoriums, mortuaries. I know there's a lot of work going around in that, which is amazing. You know, because we've all got those preconceptions and they're scary. You think, oh, God, what happens? And actually, you know, there are very good ones that open up the doors and say, do you know what? I want you to know what's going on here, because then you can prepare. And I went to a crematorium recently. It was brilliant because they said that a lady whose husband had died, he had written it all down and said, look, do not ever leave me, please. And she literally was allowed to go behind. They had the service and everything, and they took the coffin behind. And she sat there while, you know, he was going through the process of being, you know, cremated. And she sat there with a book, and her husband clearly had wanted her to do that. And she was actually quite happy about it, because what was so good is that the crematorium worked through with that so honestly and so caringly and so sensitively that she could then go away from that crematorium going, do you know what? I've done it. I've done everything he wanted. It wasn't traumatic. Maybe, obviously, it was, you know, emotional. And it's not right for everyone. But for her and her life and her husband, she can now move forward going, do you know what? I've done it. I've done everything he wanted me to do. And I feel relaxed at that, you know. And it's really, really important.
Yeah. And as well as helping other people to talk about it, there's also the challenge of helping people who maybe haven't gone through loss or a loss that affecting or profound, helping them to assume the responsibility of, like, being receptive to talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Not everybody, you know, has that devastating effect when someone dies. Maybe someone is more prepared, or maybe, you know, if it had been a very long illness, maybe, you know, it's a relief. People talk about, you know, it's a relief for someone. And yeah, I mean, you know, we're all completely different. That's the whole point. Grief and grieving and bereavement and being affected by it, we're all completely different. So, you know, if you want to have that support, it's brilliant to be able to access it really quickly and have that immediacy that hopefully the Good Grief Trust and, you know, by signposting to all those organisations is really key. But if you're not, well, then that's amazing. You know, I think we're just maybe on further down the line. That's the only thing. Sometimes you cope really well early on. But maybe there's a trigger later on. I mean, you talk about Julia Samuels, you know, who we've been working with, who I have so much admiration for, founder of Child Bereavement UK, talks about if you've had a second bereavement, perhaps, you know, you've had an early bereavement with a parent and then, say, a partner dies or a sibling dies, it goes to the same place and perhaps you're not ready for that.
Yeah.
And you sort of reel and you think, oh, my goodness, what am I feeling? How is this happening? Perhaps you haven't really dealt with it on the grief number one. So it's a good thing to be aware of. But again, know that it's all completely normal and you're not going mad. You know, again, one of those things that we've put on Facebook, you know, you're not going mad, you're grieving. You know, because you do think, oh, my goodness, what on earth am I, you know, because what it does and what it did for me personally is that it takes you to a place of reality and you have to face your own mortality. Being of a certain age, you know, you go, oh, my goodness, OK, so my partner's in a pot on a shelf, you know, that means one day that's going to happen to me. And you have to face that. And you perhaps you've been putting that aside.
And sometimes your brain's just like, nope.
Can't do it. Yeah, and for years and years and years, you know, you don't want to talk about it. You know, it's a taboo subject. You know, you get scared about it. And I was like that. I didn't want to talk about it. You know, it was something that was going to happen in the future, but you can't really get your head around it because, of course, it's so final that you think, how can we ever do that? You know, how can we be sort of alive and vital and productive and laughing? And then suddenly you're not there anymore. You're not on the planet, and that is a big thing for a human brain to deal with.
It is.
It's the weirdest thing because we are human, and then suddenly this person's not there anymore, and it's just what you know, we can't process it, but you do eventually do that, and that is the sort of the reassuring thing that you can tell people who have lost someone. You do get, you don't get to the other end, but you do move forward and there is hope, and there is light at the end of the tunnel, if you want to use a cliche. But what we have found is that you need to be supported on that journey. And the more you're supportive right at the beginning, again, Julia Samuels says, you know, it's not the circumstances of the death that will bring a positive or a negative outcome. It's the support you get at the time of death. And that is utterly key.
Yeah.
And that's what we really, really are campaigning for, is the support that you get at the time of death being right for you, for your particular circumstances. And knowing that someone is there for you right on day one, if you need it. You might not need it, but right on day one, you know, if you want it, it's there for you. And that will hopefully carry you through. And whatever support you need, hopefully, you know, you will find it. And that, whether that's a telephone line or a group support, or finding other people through a counselling sessions, one-to-one, you know, whatever, or nothing, you know, just maybe reading books or watching videos or films or, you know, whatever's right for you. But there is definitely a way forward and there is hope down the end of the line, and hopefully you will find that you can find joy again, you know, and perhaps if you've lost your partner, maybe you find love again. You know, it's very, very difficult right at the beginning to think that you might do that. Or perhaps, you know, if you've long way down the line, you've had a really long marriage and, you know, you're sort of, you know, the silver generation, perhaps you'll find some groups that you can sort of link in with and find to volunteering. Or if you've lost a colleague, you know, hopefully by supporting the employers as well, you know, we can get them to sort of provide groups and people can get support within their workplace as well. You know, there's a lot of work, you know, being done. And last year You know, we launched the all-party parliamentary group on bereavement support, a government. So again, there is amazing issues that are being brought up that perhaps we would never hear about. And hopefully we've got that platform now for people to really influence change. And that's really exciting as well. And be that the little person in the street who's had a really bad experience, who says, look, can I just let you know about this? And that can be brought along the table, or really big issues from people like Hospice UK or Child Bereavement and Cruise, you know, who are doing incredible work, and the National Bereavement Alliance and people like that who are just key in making change, you know, across the country. Again, we're really proud that we've launched that this year as well, and we're secretariat for that. So there's a lot of amazing work, and this year particularly, I think, you know, it's going to be an interesting and really, really exciting year, and hopefully we can get out into those communities and reach those people who are really suffering, and offer them support. Yeah, so it's really exciting.
Yeah.
If you've been bereaved, whether recently or years ago, then the Good Grief Trust is a great place to start to find out what help may be available to you in your area. Head to www.thegoodgrieftrust.org. Dying Matters also has a resource called What to Do If Someone You Know Has Been Bereaved. It's a leaflet that we hope will help you find the words you need to support someone in your life who's grieving or experienced a loss. You can find it on our website, www.dyingmatters.org, under the Resources tab. Thanks so much to my guest this week, Linda Magistris, and special thanks to Bernadette Ryan for our theme music. Dying Matters is a part of Hospice UK, the national charity for hospice and palliative care. If you enjoyed our podcast, make sure you rate and review us on the iTunes store so that we can reach even more people and get everyone talking. You can talk to us too. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dying Matters.